And good morning, everyone. The very best to you and yours once again on this Sunday, the day after the NFL draft wrapped up virtually, of course, in this COVID-19 pandemic. It's good to have you with us as we look back on the last 3 days and now look ahead to the coming months of uncertainty around the NFL and the rest of the world, of course. And look ahead to the Patriots. What could have been the last few days in the draft, what was, and just what might be based on who they picked and who they didn't pick over the course of the last 3 days. It is great to have you with us. It'll be great to have Phil Perry and Scott Zolak joining me in just a bit. But we open with a recap of what we saw, what we didn't see over the course of the last few days from the Patriots. They entered Thursday with a dozen picks. Of course, none in the second round. Well, they wound up making five trades and wound up with 10 players taken overall, but they didn't have a first-round pick, yet they gave us a first-night star of the draft with Nike Belichick, if I can use the surname as well, the beloved canine, of course, now a GIF and a meme for use, maybe to replace, as I said on Thursday night, the Belichick drinking orange glass GIF that we have seen over the course of so many months and years since the owners' meeting several years ago. But Nike Belichick, the Patriots' star of the night on night one, as they traded out of 23, of course, and as many know, they could have taken bevy of talented players there, many of them mocked to the Pats, Kenneth Murray and A.J. Epinesa. They could have taken a quarterback there. They did not. And so they wound up over the course of 3 days after trading out of that first night with a safety, two edge defenders, a linebacker, two tight ends, three interior offensive linemen, and a kicker. And surprisingly to most, if not all outside of Foxborough, no wide receivers and no quarterbacks. Green Bay, by the way, another team many presumed would be in the market, in dire need of wide receiver help for Aaron Rodgers, also bypassed that position, considered to be the richest in the draft, while trading up to tap quarterback Jordan Love, the fourth QB taken in this year's draft. And meanwhile, the Patriots did not draft a quarterback, and they have reportedly signed one as an undrafted free agent, which means, of course, that Jarrett Stidham, yes, the seventh quarterback taken overall in 2019, will at least go into whatever training camp presents itself for the Pats, whatever competition there is this offseason between he and Brian Hoyer as the presumed lead candidate for the Patriots to be the starter, if not indeed the starting QB for the Pats going into, again, the preseason preparation. You look at a player like Love, high ceiling in terms of the physical gifts. Now, I agree with Dan Orlovsky, who knows far better than I, that he's not in the same galaxy as Patrick Mahomes, a polarizing prospect in this year's draft. And you could say that, again, the physical gifts, a first-round quarterback, higher ceiling. But one of the things about Stidham, it seems, is that there is also a higher floor, and the ceiling is higher than a fourth-round pick. When the Patriots took him, of course, he was coming off a down year at Auburn after a very good year at Auburn. Had he come out after his junior season, he might have gone much higher in the draft. But when you look at the floor, the makeup, the ability to process, certainly more than adequate arm strength. And more important, I think, at this stage, a year in the NFL, a year in the Patriots program, he's had a preseason to compete for the Pats, and we have seen flashes there. He's had an entire season to practice. And Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels have had an entire year, again, of all those things, plus the experience and the insight they could glean, what they could learn from him and what he learned from them in meeting rooms. And now when you're looking ahead to this offseason, as has been much written about and talked about, it's an offseason of virtual OTA meetings, no on-field work, of uncertain preseason conditions and timetables, an unprecedented period, as I mentioned, for the country, but also for the NFL. So Belichick, in this draft, built defensively first and infused a lot of athleticism on the defensive side. Now, they could have taken maybe what many would consider a sure thing with that first pick at 23. They traded back to get into the second round, and they wound up with two second-round picks. And maybe the two players they took aren't perceived as sure things, although Kyle Duggar, coming out of Division II, was rated as the third-best safety on Dane Brugler's draft board. And Brugler is a guy that I think does a terrific job in breaking down the draft. But you look at him, you look at Uche, and again, two players that have athletic gifts that certainly could transcend the expectations of many going into this draft, and yet at the same time, of course, could lead to great disappointment as well if they fail to meet, you know, that potential, or at least approach it. So after netting the two defensive players with the first two picks, they get another in Anfernee Jennings. And when I look back at last year's postseason loss to the Titans and some of the other defeats for the Patriots in the second half of the season, in particular the Baltimore game, one of the things that stood out was they needed a stouter edge defender, someone to be stronger against the run. And Jennings is a player who, I think, coming out of Alabama, has the pedigree there. Yes, there's been some injury history early on, but there's a lot to like about his motor and the way he plays the game and the attributes and what he could lend to this team as an edge defender. And again, giving them a stouter presence there, perhaps eventually becoming a three-down player. And when you look back overall, the draft yesterday, the Patriots chose interior offensive linemen for the most part, along with those two tight ends that they picked up the night before. And we talked about it last week briefly on the draft show that I wouldn't be surprised if they went for the interior of the offensive line. And they're trying to build some depth there in the particular guard center positions. But you look at this team and where they are today, I certainly think that they did address some needs, and they did not address some others, as you know, in particular the wide receiver and quarterback positions. Again, needs in the perception of outsiders. We'll talk with Scott Zolak about the quarterback specifically. We'll talk with Phil Perry about all of the above as we look back on these last 3 days. And I look back on the last couple of years and look ahead to next year as well, coupled with this, as this process of the Patriots transitioning. In 2016-17, as we've documented in the past few weeks, the Patriots really netted very little from the draft classes. 2018 produced two starters, albeit one of whom has been hit hard by injuries in his first two seasons, but Isaiah Wynn is a starting player for this team when healthy. And Sony Michel, though maybe not as dynamic as many would like him to be, nonetheless is their main first down running back, a guy who had 12 touchdowns combined regular season, postseason in his rookie campaign. And they also, out of that particular class in 18, got an undrafted free agent at cornerback, who's a starter in J.C. Jackson and a very good one. 2019 produced nine players from a class that is still in Foxborough, plus undrafted free agents Jacoby Myers and Gunnar Olszewski. And now you look at this year's class, 10 picks, more athleticism on defense. Granted, I understand the skepticism of a player taken from the Division II ranks with that top pick. But while you may point to some of the second round so-called busts in the past, disappointments in the past for the Patriots, particularly at the safety position, certainly Duggar's athletic traits compare far favorably, for example, to a recent second round safety taken in Jordan Richards. And Duggar would appear to be a guy that they envision as a successor to Patrick Chung in that defense, and with the idea of defending these faster offenses, and particularly the more athletic quarterbacks in the league, it's the kind of position that becomes even more valuable today and tomorrow than it was just yesterday. Tavon Wilson, another player in the second round, is a safety taken by the Patriots who comes to mind, good special teams player for the most part, but you look at Duggar, and again, the athletic traits, certainly it's not exactly apple to apple in comparing him to Richards or Wilson, at least in my mind. And then I look at the next year, 2021, a lot of cap relief. They get a comp pick for Brady. I certainly think that, you know, the process continues, not to say that they're not going to be competitive in the coming year. Particularly, it's going to be a very difficult season for this team with a schedule, NFC West, AFC West, plus an improving AFC East. The Bills certainly appeared to help themselves yesterday. They got Epinesa at number 54, a player that many thought the Patriots might take at number 23. And they added a running back, a tough running back out of Utah, that could help their offense right away. The Jets and the Dolphins. Jets, of course, with Joe Douglas in his first draft. A lot of discipline helping up front and getting a speedy wide receiver. Another player that some thought, including Phil, who will join us momentarily, might be on the Patriots' radar and showing that kind of discipline to try to help Sam Darnold out down the road. And the Dolphins, of course, getting Tua. Maybe not the impact player in 2020 because of the circumstances and because of the injury issues, but nonetheless, a quarterback that could potentially be their franchise guy, finally, after Dan Marino, but then showing a lot more discipline again, building on the offensive line and adding to that team on both sides as Brian Flores continues to develop the culture there for Miami. So the Patriots have their work cut out for them, certainly, but I do think that right now we're in the middle of this process that really began a couple of years ago, and with some promise still, jury's still very much out on last year's class, and now this year's class, you look ahead to next year, and it's part of that window of transitioning from where they were, the prior generations of players over the course of the last 20 years who won the six titles, to the next generation of the nucleus of the Patriots that they hope will add a seventh before too long. We'll come back momentarily with Phil. First, these words on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Patriots are on the clock.
With the 23rd pick.
As the Sports Hub NFL Draft Show continues.
TimberTech believes good enough is never enough.
This is where the experts break it all down. The Sports Hub NFL Draft Show with Bob Soucy. Brought to you by Massachusetts Health Connector and Cross Insurance. Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
I'm curious if by not selecting a quarterback, that says something about the confidence you have in the current quarterback room with Jared and Brian.
I like both those players. You know, we've had Brian a couple times, and I think, you know, he certainly gives us a very solid level of play, and we have a lot of confidence in him. Jared had a good year last year. He improved a lot, and we'll see where that takes him. So I have confidence in both players.
All right, welcome back to our NFL Draft Review Show. Mike Giardi from the NFL Network, formerly, of course, with NBC Sports Boston, posing the question to Bill Belichick at his post-draft teleconference with New England media. Phil Perry, part of that call, part of the coverage. I don't think anybody outworked Phil Perry over the course of the last 3-4 months in preparing for this year's draft while anticipating the arrival of the new addition to the family, his daughter, born just a couple of weeks ago, and his wife, of course, someone who's committed in the medical healthcare profession to doing her great part in this COVID-19 pandemic. So as I welcome him, Phil, I'm going to commend him for all the work he has done, particularly under his personal circumstances, and thank him as well. Phil, good to have you on.
Bob, thanks a lot for having me. Going to go full Belichick on you right now. I'm going to say, nobody works harder than Bob. Nobody works harder than Tom. Nobody works harder than Mike. No, there's a lot of guys working hard on this beat on the draft, and it's fun to track all the coverage and then see what actually happens on draft weekend. So I had a fun last 3 days.
A lot of questions raised over the course of the last few days, and Bill Belichick gave us some answers last night. In your mind, you look back on the draft that was, who they took, who they didn't take, what he said about their picks. What questions do you think were answered, and what are some of the questions now that we should be thinking about?
Yeah, I look at the quarterback position first and foremost, and the answer there to me is that, yes, they are going to roll with Jarrett Stidham. And maybe Brian Hoyer is there to start because of the offseason, and maybe it is asking a little bit much of the second-year quarterback to come in right away and be the guy. But without a significant investment at that position, I would say in the first 2 days of the draft, the indication is clear there that Jarrett Stidham's going to be given a chance to win this job, and for better or for worse, they're going to roll with this guy. And I think that is the right plan, because if you've found something great, you've struck gold, it's a starting quarterback on day three of the draft in 2019 on a very short, in terms of money, rookie salary, and there's nothing more valuable in the NFL than that. If it works out, phenomenal. If it doesn't, then, Bob, you're back in a position next year where you're probably, if not in the middle of the draft in 2021, a little bit higher than that. And via trade, you're within striking distance of probably landing one of the two or three best quarterbacks in next year's class. So I like the idea of giving Jarrett Stidham a chance. I like his physical talent. I like everything we've heard about him in terms of his personality and his intelligence and his character. And I think it is worth rolling the dice with Stidham for 2019 or 2020, just to see what you have. And so that was the biggest answer that I think we got this weekend. The other one, just really quickly, Bob, to me, with the first two picks they made, very clear to me that they wanted to get faster and more athletic up front in their defense. And even though the first pick was a defensive back, I'm envisioning, and I know other people around the league are envisioning, Kyle Duggar being sort of a box safety. So when you look at Kyle Duggar and you look at Josh Uche, they got very fast up front, and I think that's critical when you're looking at the AFC and your two biggest competitors for the foreseeable future are teams that are loaded with speed in Baltimore and Kansas City.
And Phil, knowing your preparation, and in particular, thinking about one of your next Pats podcasts with Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl, I heard your instant reaction after the Patriots took the Division II player with their top pick out of Lenore Ryan, Kyle Duggar. And I got a sense that you were kind of kicking yourself in some way because he's a player that had a great combine and somebody that you were aware of, but maybe hadn't mocked to the Patriots or at least put as a prototypical Patriot, and they take him. So when you look back on it retrospectively, as surprising as it is and as little sense as it might make to many, does it make a lot of sense to you?
It does. And the reason I was kicking myself is because he is more of, and we do this series all throughout the pre-draft process. We call it our prototypical Patriots, and we're looking at all sorts of things. It's athleticism, yes, it's size, height, weight, speed. It's where these guys go to school, the programs that they play for, the coaches that they played under. It's off the field stuff that we can gather from scouts and from coaches and from people that are interviewing these players and that know them really well. And so as we're compiling these lists, Kyle Duggar made the list, but he didn't seem to be as much of a prototype as some others, guys that we think of as Belichick types, right? Guys that are coming from the SEC, the Alabama guys, the Florida guys. And the reason I'm kicking myself is because he is more of a prototype than I initially expected, even though he's a Division II player. A lot of that is because of the athleticism, and we've seen them dip into smaller programs in the past to take athletes. And back in 2013, the Kyle Duggar pick is a little bit reminiscent to me of the Jamie Collins pick, where you traded out of the first round. You probably saw a player that you liked that was closer to the top of the second and would be available to you there. And that's who you end up taking, even though he's from a smaller school, because you envisioned a role for him because he was that gifted physically. And the Collins pick, whether you thought it worked out or didn't, the guy obviously ended up being a pretty serious NFL talent. And I think that's what the Patriots think they have in Kyle Duggar as well, because all throughout the combine, really, multiple people telling me that the Patriots, even though this guy's a D2 guy, Kyle Duggar is somebody to look out for as a match to New England.
And Phil, many people, of course, who study this in depth, felt that the tight end class was very thin. And Cole Kmet was seen almost universally as maybe the most NFL-ready tight end, the most sure thing of a guy who at least could come in and play, contribute in the NFL. Maybe the ceiling wouldn't be as high. The Patriots took a guy who was considered the best tight end in his class by many coming out of high school in UCLA's Devin Asiasi. When you watch him, what do you see?
I see somebody who can do almost anything you need from that tight end position. And just from talking to people who study this class of tight ends really closely, one tight ends coach in particular from the AFC, I'm going back and forth with him the other day after the Patriots make the pick, and they had made the Dalton Keene pick as well. We can get into him if you want. But, my question is, okay, is this sort of, reminiscent of 2010 to you, where they draft the bigger tight end, and Asiasi is 260 pounds. He's only 6'3", so he's not Gronk size in terms of his height, but he is 260 pounds. Is he your classic Y inline tight end who's going to be able to block on the line of scrimmage and be a serviceable receiver for you, whereas Keene is your classic F, sort of more of your move tight end type who can play all over? And what I got back was, I think Devin Asiasi can do anything, is what this tight end coach told me. And when you watch him on tape, you can see why that's the reaction from football people to this particular player, because he's really dynamic with the ball in his hands, will run through contact. There's clips of him jumping over people running down the field, but a real seam stretcher, I think. Bob, he ran a 4.7 at his size. That's pretty explosive. But he is, I think right now, from the people that I've spoken to, the most ready-made blocker at that position in this year's class. Cole Kmet has the frame to be a phenomenal blocker. He's not there yet in terms of the technique and in terms of the aggressiveness. Devin Asiasi is a little bit more advanced as far as that goes, and certainly a capable receiver too. So a lot of people across the league were hoping he would fall even farther. There are some concerns, I would say, off the field, Bob, with that particular player. He was suspended going into the 2018 season, so maybe some teams were a little bit wary of adding him. But I think the Patriots have to feel good about what he brings to the table, because they have so many good references that have spent time with this guy, whether it's Chip Kelly, whether it's Jed Fish, who was with Asiasi, yep, both at Michigan and at UCLA. So I'm sure they feel good about the character. And there were some tight ends coaches, I can tell you, across the league that were hoping he would slip all the way to the sixth and they would get maybe the steal of the draft, and the Patriots end up getting him earlier than that.
And regarding Keane, I see him maybe as a project to be developed a couple of years down the road based on what Bill said last night about the translation from the Virginia Tech offense or the lack thereof to what the Patriots do. But they have Vital and James Devlin right now at fullback. And I look at a player like Charles Clay, who Bill was enamored with for many years and praised so much from Miami and Buffalo, is a piece that moved around a lot, originally a fullback. Do you envision a role for Keane down the road where he can kind of take the place of James Devlin if they need him to line up in the backfield, but then be that movement tight end, as you said, and kind of move all over the field in his alignments?
I think he could do that sparingly, Bob. I don't know if he would ever be a full-time fullback, but I look at him and his athleticism, and he's taller than the player I'm about to mention, but he's a really good athlete. I think you could use him in a variety of ways, and the guy that I think of when I think of Dalton Keane is Kyle Juszczyk.
Right.
And the San Francisco 49ers, who they use all over the field, and their fullback usage in terms of the percentage of their snaps is through the roof every single year because they want to get that guy, Kyle Juszczyk, on the field as often as they can. To me, Keane is similar athletically, maybe not quite as quick, maybe a little bit more stiff. That's what I've been told about Dalton Keane. But in terms of the effort that you're going to get as a blocker, as a receiver after the catch, and it was funny to hear Nick Caserio say, you had to go searching for some things on tape with him. The way I read into that, because I've heard this from other people across the league, was why the hell did Virginia Tech not use this guy more as a receiver, Bob? He was really rarely used in the passing game. But when he was really productive. So I sort of envision that kind of Swiss Army knife type of role for him in this offense. I think Josh McDaniels could get really creative with Dalton Keane.
Phil, were you surprised that the offensive linemen they took were primarily, if not exclusively, on the interior? I guess Heron from Wake Forest is someone who's primarily an interior player. But with the day three picks on the offensive line in particular, what does that mean, do you think, looking forward?
I think it's good depth just to load up in there. You know, good news for the Patriots that, you know, David Andrews has been cleared to come back. You know, that was a scary situation for him last year, but you're looking at your top three guys returning. But one of those guys, his future is a little bit uncertain. You look at Joe Tooney, he's on a one-year contract. He's being paid essentially like a left tackle for 2020, and who knows where he's going to be in 2021. So I think it's smart at that point in the draft where, listen, every pick in every draft is a dart throw to some extent, but especially on day three, not a bad idea to load up on players, whether it's players who have impressive physical tools like Michael Onwenu, who is just a massive human being, played at essentially 370 pounds last year, but still has good enough movement skills to be a third team all Big Ten selection the last 2 years. That's a conference with some really good offensive lines and really talented players on the offensive line across the board. Whether it's somebody like that, whether it's a smarter player, like the last two offensive linemen that they took, Heron and Woodard from Wake Forest and from Memphis, you know, there are traits that go with all of these guys that I think make them Patriots fits. Who knows if any of them even end up on the roster, Bob, but with the uncertainty with Tooney and with Karras leaving and maybe, you know, James Ferentz, who knows what his role is for the Patriots moving forward. If he's back, you know, I think there's enough uncertainty in terms of the depth on the interior that it made sense to load up there on day three.
Phil, somebody that you thought they might take late in day three, they wound up signing as an undrafted free agent. He's a dynamic running back from Arizona. Now, their running back room is pretty well stocked, but what kind of future could J.J. Taylor have, and how could it affect the current members of that running back room?
Oh, boy. Bob, I love J.J. Taylor. This guy was maybe one of the most fun players I had studying all pre-draft process, and a lot of it is because of his size. He's 5'5", 185 pounds. So that's even smaller than Deion Lewis. But he has some Lewis to his game because he is really quick in the short area. It's really hard for defensive players in the front seven just to find him, just to get their eyes on him, because he's hidden behind bigger offensive linemen. And you saw that happen time and again when he was with Arizona. And no, he's not necessarily a game breaker in terms of his speed. And I think there are always going to be questions, you know, about any player with that kind of frame in terms of how he's going to hold up, just in terms of his durability, but also for somebody like Taylor, who can catch the ball out of the backfield, how will he hold up as a pass protector at the next level, which we know is critical to the Patriots if you're going to be playing on third down. But as an undrafted free agent, why not take a shot on that guy? Because we've seen them work with diminutive running backs in the past, whether it's Lewis, whether it's Danny Woodhead. And, you know, I think there is something to that height factor. If you can get a good athlete who's strong enough, who's a little bit shorter, I think that can be a real advantage. I mean, look at the career Darren Sproles carved out for himself. And it's just, it's really difficult for these guys to get found in the trash, so to speak, in the front seven. They can end up, if they're athletic enough, creating some explosive plays based on some of that uncertainty that they provide to opposing defenders. So I hope we get a chance to see J.J. Taylor in camp. Even if it's just as, you know, a quote-unquote camp body, you know, that's a lot of times what these undrafted rookies are. But, boy, he was a lot of fun to watch as a college player, and hopefully it'll be fun to watch as a pro.
Absolutely. Phil, let me ask you about the division on a final note. Your thoughts about what the Dolphins, Jets, and Bills did?
You know, the Dolphins draft was fascinating to me. I didn't love their first two picks. I'm going to be honest with you, Bob. I thought they should really hold off on the quarterback position until late in the first round, and maybe even entirely hold off in the first round. To me, and listen, Tua Tagovailoa is a talented player, really accurate, a tremendous anticipatory thrower, but too many question marks for me to make him the face of my franchise. And that's what you're doing, taking him in the top five. They must feel great about the medicals, but the questions to me go beyond the medical. It's, you know, are you injury prone or are you prone to injury? And I think his style of play makes him prone to injury, because he wants to get every single yard that is there for him on every single play. And it leads to him taking unnecessary risks with his health. And that to me is not ideal at that position, especially where you can't have a guy who's not durable and going into, you know, week after week of your regular season, maybe the postseason, not knowing if he's going to be available to you. So I didn't love that pick, the Tua pick. And I didn't love their second pick, the lineman Austin Jackson from USC. I think he's a tremendous physical talent, all kinds of length, really great movement skills. And oftentimes that's enough to project well to the NFL. And usually that pans out. But I thought he was maybe the sixth or seventh best tackle in this year's draft. It was a loaded class. I would have felt more comfortable if I was them, maybe going tackle at number five, making sure you get the best guy there, or one of the best two there, and then maybe adding your quarterback a little bit later, or punting entirely, Bob, because it's okay to build slow, and I think they've done that well over the last couple of years. I think they tried to hit the fast-forward button on their rebuild a little bit this offseason. They had a ton of money to play with. They spent a lot of it. They ended up taking a lot of guys in this year's draft that I would call projections. So I would have maybe tried to be a little bit more patient, and if I needed to, dip into the quarterback class next year while building up around that position this year.
Yeah, I think too many teams in the past have reached for the quarterback, and it's wound up setting them back so far that the staff who takes him isn't around to pick the next guy. I hope for Brian Flores' sake, although not too much, that at least this is a draft that helps him do what he wants to accomplish for the most part in Miami, except unseat the Patriots. Hey, Phil, listen, congratulations on the baby. Thanks for your time. I know you've been, you know, you've had a lot on your plate, and I really appreciate you taking some time. I hope you can get some rest.
Thanks so much for having me, Bob, and thanks for doing this show all pre-draft season long. It's a tremendous listen for me, and I know a lot of others who love the draft. So phenomenal job on your part, and we'll be talking to you soon, my friend.
All right, thanks. Phil Perry from NBC Sports Boston. Listen to his next Pats podcast. Coming up, listen to Scott Zolak. He joins me right after this on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's a whole new era for the Pats, and it all starts with the NFL draft. This is where we break it all down. The Sports Hub NFL Draft Show with Bob Sosi. Brought to you by Massachusetts Health Connector and Cross Insurance on Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports. Sports Hub.
I'm sure that our young players are all, you know, improving year two. Been a first round pick on Nikhil last year, and, you know, second round pick on Sanu, you know, that was really off of this draft. Obviously have, you know, Julian and a number of other young players, and there's a lot of different ways and times to build your team. And the draft's one of them, as I mentioned, whether it's, you know, Sanu or free agent signing like Bird or, you know, whatever the case might be. There's multiple ways to build your roster.
Patriots coach Bill Belichick asked about the Pats' draft devoid of wide receivers in his post-draft press conference last night, teleconference call with reporters from New England. And joining us now on our Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, my broadcast partner, Scott Zolak. And so as I welcome you aboard, again, condolences to you and yours. We talked before you went out to Pittsburgh, and I know you've returned from your dad's funeral, so hope that things went well there, and it's good to have you back at the station, back on the air.
Thanks, buddy. Really appreciate that. It's good to get back and, you know, work through some of this. And kind of odd, you know, usually scroll through my phone, you know, post-draft, and always call my dad, hey, Dad, what do you think about the picks? That's pretty much the first time I could do that in a while. But there are days like that, and we all grow up. We understand that. Everybody gets older, and you have to deal with losses like that. But, you know, looking at this draft, I think it's a pretty solid draft. You know, we do this each and every year, put a grade on it. I'm not going to slap a grade on this draft because, honestly, I didn't watch many of these kids play, but I did watch some, like Afrinay Jennings, you know, the linebacker from Alabama. You see Alabama a lot on TV. I think they addressed a lot of needs. You and I have talked a lot of times about the tight end position. And I think they got two guys, the one that can go a little vertical, the kid from UCLA. What do we say his name is? Asiasi? You're going to have fun with that, right? With the who's the running back? The Asiago cheese guy.
Yeah. Asiata. Yeah, from the Vikings when we were out in Minnesota in 2014.
Yeah, and then the kid seems like he could be an H-back, kid from Virginia Tech. So it's sort of like, you know, the Gronkowski-Hernandez combo, where you get a bigger guy that could go vertical, maybe put his hand down, block a little bit, and the other guy more of an H-back.
Right, right. No quarterbacks. And, you know, they go into this offseason with Jarrett Stidham, Brian Hoyer, yep, and then an undrafted free agent, Jamar Smith, reportedly out of Louisiana Tech. Do you think it just comes down to the fact that once you got past maybe the two or three quarterbacks who were taken ahead of Jordan Love when the Patriots were going to pick at 23, there wasn't a quarterback they felt could unseat Jarrett Stidham or be better than Jarrett Stidham?
No, and I think Jaren Stidham won the draft yesterday. If you look at it, that guy should have been smiling because they didn't address the position. That means to me, and those are sort of indicators going back to my experience, when you're on a roster and you're sweating, is the team going to draft a quarterback? And when they don't, like, oh, okay, good. They do like me. I think it's a big win for Stidham yesterday. And the multiple people that I talked to, they like Stidham within that building. I'm telling you. I think from what I've heard, he's ahead of where Jimmy was in his development. Now, they're not comparing him to Jimmy. Different players, right? Spin the ball differently. One guy's more compact. Stidham, I think, is more of a relaxed, cerebral type of player. But I think they like his progression, where he's at, how he's picked up things. And I think going back, again, to what we talked about last August, they felt comfortable rolling with two guys. And to back up Tom Brady, you know, in year one, that was a big feather in his cap. And I think, you know, with a year under the belt, as much as they can do video conference-wise, and I know Bill said, hey, Stid's been in the building. It could be a medical thing there. But he's been there, and I think it's his team, Bob. I really do. And I know they're not just going to gift-wrap it and hand it to him. They want to push the kid. That's why you bring Brian Hoyer in and say, hey, you're going to compete for it. But that's a big win for Stidham, and I don't think it was a strong quarterback class yesterday. I thought the Chargers reached at Herbert. I don't like Herbert. I think, you know, mm-hmm. I think he's the next Paxton Lynch / Ryan Tannehill type player early in his career. Hey, Miami put their chips on the table with Tua. They're going to roll with him. But I love Jalen Hurts. I thought Hurts going in the second round to Philly, if anybody's sweating yesterday, and you see Schefter's tweets, hey, here's Carson's crew, and he listed all of the weapons that Carson Wentz now has. That's kind of Jalen Hurts' crew if I look at it. I'd be a little ticked off if I was Carson Wentz or if I was Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers didn't get any receiver help either. The Packers also a team that many thought would draft a wide receiver high, and they didn't take any like the Patriots. You heard Bill's response last night when asked about the wide receiver position. What do you make of it? What do you think of their reasoning looking ahead? I know they signed Marquise Lee, but to me he falls into that category of so many other veterans who've come in here and not stuck on the roster in the past.
Yeah, but I think Lee can do that as a 4 or 5. You know what I mean? As a 4. Right. Bring a guy in and you want to make him a 1 or 2, see, that's problematic. You bring Sanu and you give up that second-round pick right at the deadline last year, and then he gets dinged up returning a punt. He's never the same guy. I'm anxious to see what Sanu can do because, I know he just recently had the surgery, a month and a half ago? So he's got to rehab that, but he should be good to go. We know what Julian can do. Bill brought up N'Keal Harry first. Hey, we drafted a kid number one last year. Should be healthy. Should be ready to go this year. My expectations with Stidham, sort of the same with N'Keal Harry. These guys should be ready to go and compete, in camp whenever we get to camp. Hopefully, it's pretty soon. but there are players there. It's just who's going to respond. I think it's good they addressed the tight end position. Finally, have some bodies there now. We know what these running backs can do. And don't forget about guys like Burkhead and James White that they can flex out and throw the ball to. So, the addition of fullbacks, I think you're going to have a running game. To me, I think they're loaded up on defense based on this draft. You look at the amount of linebackers that they got. They got some quality guys. The kid from Wake Forest on that left side, he's got some potential. I watched some film on him last night. His feet are pretty damn good, and to pair him over there with Isaiah Wynn, maybe give him a little bit of relief. He drafted a center that's pretty much played every snap of his career, which is sort of the same when they drafted David Andrews. Not drafted David Andrews, but brought him in. And he played at that high level of Georgia in all those SEC games, never miss a game. Dave was a 4-year starter there. And I know he's healthy and ready to go and anxious to get back at it. I think the line will be stronger than people think it's going to be. And I think they're going to run the ball and keep it away from people and win with defense. You got to win differently this year.
Well, I think when you look at the defense, they added players, especially the top two picks, who have a pretty high ceiling of athleticism. They've got great athletic traits. Now, I know there's a lot of skepticism about a Division II player, but you made a great point about one of your former teammates, one of the great players in this team's history, who came out of Division II. And you look at NFL rosters, there are a lot of guys from that level who have done very, very well in the NFL.
There's many reasons why guys get lost in the shuffle. It could be economic upbringing. It could be grades. Maybe you didn't do well in school. Maybe you didn't play at a big high school. Sometimes when you don't play for the 10,000 kids, you get lost. Or you play at a very remote location, and you have to go to a D2 or D3 school. Football players put their pants on the same way. You either put your right leg in first, then you put your left, you put your socks on, your shoes. Get a kid go out and play football. And, I got drafted before Ben Coates. There's your laugher of the day right there. And I remember standing next to Marv Cook, who was coming off an all-pro season. Marv Cook was our tight end back in the early 90s. And he's laughing in the huddle, and he said, "It's nice to see you and play with you, but I won't be here that much longer." I go, "What the hell are you talking about? You're Pro Bowl." He goes, "That guy's going to take my job right there." And he points to Ben. He goes, "That kid's a freaking stud." And I remember Bledsoe hit Coates out in the flat on a little flat route. It was a little hot route up in Buffalo our first game that year. Ben made a guy miss, took it about 55 yards for a score, and we go, "Holy crap, Jesus, this kid's going to be good." And he caught my first touchdown. He played Livingstone College, which is now defunct. They don't even have a program. And look at Jerry Rice. These guys that come out of these small schools and don't even have programs anymore. If you can play football, great football coaches will find you. And that's kind of the hope here with this kid. And this kid's big. He's a stud. He looks good. But we've seen other guys come in, Rozai Dowling-type players, in that second round, and you sit there and just say, "Boy, I hope this kid can be good," because you had Jordan Richards. That didn't work out. Things look good when you bring him in. Stanford kid, smart kid, right? Played at a high level. It just didn't work out here for him. So keep your fingers crossed on this one.
You look at Bill's comments last night, or listen to what Bill had to say, and he talked about building a team, and the draft's not the only way you build a team. Do you think that the Patriots are going to do more in the next couple of months before we get to the season to try to address some of those areas that we've been talking about in the lead up to the draft, whether it's at the wide receiver position or somewhere else on that side of the ball?
Yes, I do. And he's always stated that too. Same thing with Nick Castaria. They're always moving. They're always working. The roster is never final. It's never set. and based on our current conditions, you know, around us, I think, you know, this team is probably better than most based on their attention to detail, their work ethic, the amount of time they put into studying things, you know, nose to the grindstone in front of computers. So I think the research that they do, them being ahead of everybody in that scouting department, Marty Austinfort, what he does, Monty Austinfort, you know, they work harder than anybody. And I think, you know, when you compare the other teams in this league, some are a little behind the eight ball and maybe didn't prepare, you know, for the type of conditions that we have now with COVID. And hopefully we're ahead of the game. And their ability to study teams, always be doing that, always bringing players in during the week to work them out on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Just have information on everybody just in case somebody goes down.
Hey, so Phil Perry was just on, and he talked about the other teams in the division, specifically the Dolphins. He was not high on the pick of Tua. I know that you were not necessarily in favor of a move up to try to get Tua from a Patriots point of view. You look at the other teams in the division. What do you say about the Bills, Miami especially, and the Jets over the course of this draft?
I think the Bills are the ones that you look at and say, wow. let's see if these guys pan out. You get another weapon on the outside for Josh Allen. Could Josh Allen grasp that? You know, they got Fromm, correct?
Yeah.
And I liked him. See, I thought Fromm and Jalen Hurts threw the ball better than anybody at the combine. That's why I considered a weak quarterback class. But, you know, you combine that with Buffalo's already good defense and sort of the base that Sean McDermott has established up there. I think Buffalo is sort of ahead of everybody right now at the game. And Miami's acquired some guys. They got a lot of picks. You know, Pete Flo's trying to establish culture there. I think from a culture standpoint, Buffalo's ahead of the game more so than anybody. The Jets, you never know. I think the Jets still have the best quarterback. And you look at what Sam Darnold has done and played at the collegiate level, and sort of had some good games, some bad games, really bad games. We saw one last year. And I just think if he can put it together, he should be the best quarterback within our own division. But right now, I don't think he is. And it's a toss-up. I think Buffalo should be smelling blood in the water right now. If anybody thinks it's their division, it should be theirs. But, again, you know, don't count Coach Belichick out. Don't count this team out. There's still a lot of good hardcore veterans here, especially on the defensive side of the football.
Yeah, and I think as you underscore, too, given the circumstances, the uniqueness of this offseason and what might lie ahead this coming season, it adds to the importance of coaching and developing a team during the course of that season, and nobody does it better than Bill.
No, I think it's leadership, too. You know, which guy's going to work out hard on their own? There's certain guys that need to be pushed. And trust me, it is hard to work out on your own. You're sitting there, you're trying to lift, or you have your gym, or you want to go out and run hills. There's nothing that can replicate working out the skill group when you have eight other guys at your, you know, position, whether you're running with receivers, you know, tight ends, you know, tailbacks. Everybody pushes everybody. And if a kid's on a squat rack or if he's, you know, trying to get that, you know, 6-minute mile in, you know, twice a day, you know, you got guys that sit there in that locker room rooting for him, yelling for him. You can't replicate that at home. And whichever veterans are able to do that, that team is going to be ahead of those other ones where, hey, maybe I'm going to eat a pizza today and not work out as hard. It's a tough go out there. I feel bad for these guys that, you know, as an athlete, you're so trained and used to being in the building. And, you know, Rodney Harrison has talked about this. Tom Brady's talked about this. We're going to beat each other in at 5:30 in the morning. I don't know how many are getting up at 5:30 in the morning to get down to the gym or put a hooded sweatshirt on like Rocky and, you know, crack 6 eggs and let's go run the hill, right? I know you are. You're training for the marathon. I sure as hell are.
Yeah, not training as hard these days. I'm trying to exercise, but fewer opportunities to run these days. Longer days at home with the kids.
I know.
That's,
I know,
you know, that's a marathon. Believe me, that's a marathon every day.
I'll send you some over later.
Listen, I appreciate it. Take care. And I can't wait till we're talking in the booth about what we're going to see on the field.
Times like this, they have made me, you know, kind of, I don't take camp for granted, take practices for granted, you know, studying play sheets, you know, watching guys at practice, you know, pretty much BSing up there on that hillside. I'm going to be so excited once we're going to be able to go to camp and get out there and smell the cut grass and, you know, hear the pads, you know, clicking out there, the cleats clicking on the pavement. I'm excited for football. We got to get back to normal around here at some point. I just – I just hope that sooner than later.
Me too. Zoe, thanks a lot.
Always, buddy. See you soon.
All right, Scott Zolak with us. I'll wrap it up right after this.
The Patriots are on the clock.
With the 23rd pick.
As the Sports Hub NFL Draft Show continues. Expert analysis on the 2020 NFL Draft. This is the Sports Hub NFL Draft Show with Bob Sosi. Brought to you by Massachusetts Health Connector and Cross Insurance. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Welcome back to our final minute or so on the draft preview and review show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Of course, a draft unlike any other in our lifetimes, unlike any other in NFL history, with the NFL coaches and executives around the league from their homes, for the most part, if not exclusively, in their home offices, making their picks virtually, of course. It gave us a lot of great shots of coaches and GMs with their families and their pets, of course, and sometimes shots of only the pets in the frame. And you heard a lot of them and have read a lot of them this morning or the last couple of days say how much they enjoy that opportunity to draft from home and be with their loved ones and give the kids and, again, their pets and as well their significant others an opportunity to share the spotlight. It was a great thing, I think, and added a lot of intimacy to the draft to see so many of the families surrounding the coaches and GMs during the course of the last few nights. And I certainly hope that you and yours were able to enjoy the draft like I was with your families these last few days. I'm certainly grateful for the good fortune to have that relief. We, of course, have gone through this unprecedented period in the COVID-19 pandemic without sports, without live sporting events, and with very little to look forward to on the sports landscape, primarily looking back on what took place in the past. But I was so relieved on Friday in particular, the second round of the draft for the Patriots with all those picks and the excitement and, of course, the mystery to follow the draft. And, of course, we now get back looking ahead to the coming days and weeks to this new reality. And I certainly wish you and yours as you head into the unknown over the course of however many days lie ahead before we get to the other side of this pandemic, all the very best. But it was a great respite, if you will, and I certainly look forward to a time when we can reconvene at football stadiums and in the broadcast booth with my partners, in my case. And I certainly think that, when we do, we'll appreciate that all the more, as I state the obvious, because it certainly was a welcome relief these last few days to at least think about football, to look ahead with optimism or, in some cases, even pessimism, depending on how you viewed this draft for the Patriots. I want to thank everybody involved in the show over the course of the last few weeks, all of our guests, particularly today, Phil Perry from NBC Sports Boston, and Scott Zolak, my broadcast partner, and, of course, the co-host of the Zolak and Bertrand radio program, middays on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Thanks especially to our producer, Tracy Clements, for all her work, and thanks to you for joining us along the way. Of course, if you're just tuning in, you're going to hear Christian Arcan with the headlines and then his day part coming up. If you didn't hear the draft review show and you want to hear more of it, well, if you want to hear some of our draft preview shows, they're archived on the website, 98.5thesportshub.com. I will talk to you when we talk to you again from Gillette Stadium. And until then, again, the very best to you and yours. Stay safe, everyone. Thanks so much.